Riviera Beach was so slow and laid back. It wasn't trashy, it was funky.
It may have been the poorest city in Palm Beach County, Florida, but to Martha Babson, Riviera Beach was home.
And all the other tenants, they were just people like us. We were struggling to make the place nicer from the ground up.
But when they tried to actually make the place nicer, the city council wasn't happy.
They wouldn't even give out, you know, permits for people to fix things up or add a driveway. That was the beginning of it becoming a blighted neighborhood. They were letting the place go.
Martha had a feeling the city was planning something, but she didn't know what until one day.
They unveiled the plan in December of 2000, and we were in shock. Our homes were all being taken. It's the whole downtown from one border to the other that they're going to take through eminent domain.
The city struck a deal with a private developer to turn the waterfront into luxury condos and a marina for wealthy people's yachts. But there was a problem. On the land they planned to redevelop, there were houses. Over 2,000 houses and 5,500 people lived inside them, including one man who lived at the Riviera Beach Municipal Marina in a floating house.
Which will bring us to the issue of Fain, because he came in when it was ripe.
I'm Matthew Billy, and you're listening to Bleeped, a new podcast about censorship and the people who stand up to it. Because sometimes free speech comes with a price.
I remember when I was growing up seeing floating homes in Miami Beach and in North Bay Village and in different areas, and I said, this would be perfect for me. I guess from a young age, I said, you know, this is a cool way to live.
That's Fain Lozman. He's a successful stock options trader. In the early 2000s, when trading moved online and he could work from anywhere, Fain decided to move back home to Florida and live out his childhood dream of owning a floating house.
I loved looking out the window and seeing manatees and seeing fish. It was just a wonderful way to really be in touch with nature directly, because it's right there at your front step.
In 2005, Hurricane Wilma destroyed a lot of Florida's coastline, including the marina in Miami that Fain used for his floating house. Somehow, his house survived, but he had to look for a new marina. That's when he discovered Riviera Beach.
The first thing that stood out was how crystal clear the water was. When the tides come in, they would bring in fresh water, and it was just crystal clear down to, you know, the bottom 20 feet. I only visited that one time. I actually even had lunch with the marina director at the Tiki Bar. He said it was a wonderful place to live, and he was happy to have me up there. So I was really looking forward to living there, you know, forever.
After Fain signed the lease for Slip 452, he rented a towboat to pull his floating house all the way up from Miami to its new home.
It took 18 hours. You can't stop. There's nowhere to pull over and tie off. I was a little bit fatigued, but I was quite happy to finally get there.
And what did you do when you got there?
We tied off and I was starving. I went right to the Tiki Bar and ordered a meal.
But before his order arrived, a guy sitting next to him struck up a conversation.
And one of the customers there said, hey, why did you come up here? They're going to privatize this marina and make it into a mega yacht, upscale marina. And I was like, wow, I just got here. I was in shock because I had signed a lease agreement and no one bothered to tell me, like, hey, you know, you're going to have to leave in a few months when we privatize the marina and start kicking everybody out.
Did you confront the director?
Yeah, I actually went to his office and I said, what's going on? And he just, you know, shrugged his shoulders. And then I started learning about the redevelopment program and about eminent domain. I went to purchase some seashells for my girlfriend at the time. I went in there and this woman was just crying. She was so upset. And it had to do with the threat that they were going to take her property away. She explained how she had come to the country and had married a gentleman and they'd run the business together and then he passed away and this was her only means to support her two young children. And in the back of my mind, I said, I'm going to fight this out. We're going to figure a way to stop this from happening.
Fain learned as much as he could about Riviera Beach. He spent hours poring through government records and chatting with other residents. One person told him about a community activist group that was already fighting the redevelopment plan. and Fane decided to introduce himself.
Immediately after I showed up, I started going to those meetings and meeting some of the other activists that had been fighting the eminent domain battle for the previous year.
Fane showed up in a suit, and that was the first time we met him.
They filled me in with portions of the story, but we really didn't have a plan of attack.
Fane had a Rolodex of legal tools and the money to be able to call the right one at the right time. He was a one-man tornado.
So how did you come up with a strategy?
It kind of landed in our lap.
While all this was going on, the Florida legislature was working on a new law making it illegal to do exactly what Riviera Beach was trying to do, seize land through eminent domain and hand it over to a private developer. The bill had already passed both houses, and all it needed was Governor Jeb Bush's signature.
What happened was the word came out that he was going to sign the bill May 11th. So May 10th, the city had an emergency meeting to sign the development agreement for this massive redevelopment. So they had to rush this meeting through to sign the development agreement before the law changed.
But Florida had another law, the Open Meetings Law, that prevents city councils from doing things in secret. The Open Meetings Law forces all cities to hold their council meetings in public and let people know they're happening in advance.
They did not give what's called reasonable notice. They would have had to give a few days' notice for the most important meeting in the city's history. They gave less than a day. And that was the key going forward, because after they signed the agreement, I said, you know something, I can make them do it over again.
So Fane pulled out his Rolodex and called a lawyer.
We filed a lawsuit saying that they had violated the open meetings laws, they didn't give reasonable notice, and we wanted a do-over, with the idea that the do-over would now have to take place after the law had changed, and therefore it would kill the redevelopment process. They couldn't use eminent domain because the eminent domain opportunity was gone forever. For lack of a better word, all hell broke out after that lawsuit was filed. Oh, the city was livid. I was being followed around by Marina Security. I would walk my dog, and they would call the police. The police would come over and say the marina director called the police that I was walking my dog. And I would say, hey, I'm walking my dog on a leash. I'm not creating any problem. They said, yeah, you're creating a problem fighting the redevelopment plan.
Then when Fane refused to drop the lawsuit, the city tried to kick him out.
On August 9th, Lozman received an eviction letter from the city saying he had to leave by the end of the month.
And the eviction notice was that I had a dangerous dog.
The dangerous dog in question, Lady, a 10-pound Dachshund, or more commonly known as a wiener dog.
The city claims this resident violated marina rules and regulations by walking his dog on property without a muzzle.
I said, I'm going to fight out this eviction action. And then we had a 3-day jury trial in March 2007. I represented myself and I won.
But after the trial, the harassment didn't stop.
I'd received a number of phone calls. It was just like the movies. There was a lot of profanity that I don't know who I'm screwing with. I better stop what I'm doing. Kind of like, if you don't stop fighting the redevelopment program, you're going to get your head blown off. You know, we're going to kill you.
And this one time, things went beyond just a threat.
I don't recall where I was going, but I was leaving the marina, and as I was driving, I realized the steering, you know, wasn't functioning. I was going out of the marina. It just, you know, was very difficult, and then you just couldn't move it. Well, I parked the vehicle, and I walked back to the marina, and I was trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. And there were some guys who were just, you know, hung out at the adjacent park. I was talking to one of the guys, and he was like, hey, you know, these guys are trying to kill you. I was like, what are you talking about? And he said, yeah, they went under your vehicle.
So Fane called the police.
Determination was made that somebody cut the power steering to my truck. It wasn't like the hose was rotted or it was torn. That was intentionally cut halfway with the idea that the fluid would leak out when I was driving and then it would lock up the steering. I guess that's what they thought would happen when I'd crash and, you know.
Did this scare you?
Well, I think it intimidated my friends. I would tell them the story and they said I was crazy. I said, just get out of there. You know, kind of like, just go buy a real house.
But Fane didn't want to go buy a real house. He liked his floating house, and he had people cheering him on.
I mean, I would go to Publix, and people I wouldn't know would come up and give me a kiss, say, thank you for trying to save my home. So we were all in this battle together.
That was just a preview of the first episode of Bleeped. To find out what happens to Fane Lozman and the people of Riviera Beach, subscribe to Bleeped on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening now.